Welcome to the Blue Security Podcast, a weekly podcast for information security defenders, where we bring you discussions on best practices, tools, and implementation for enterprise security. Now, here are your hosts for today's show, Andy Jha and Adam Brewer.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Blue Security Podcast. I'm Andy, your host.
I'm Adam, your co-host.
This week, we got an email from one of our listeners. And yes, we do read our emails. Sometimes we don't get to them right away, but we do enjoy getting feedback and questions from our listeners. So please continue to do that. And this email from our listener talked about Edge Password Vault. We had talked about a lot of passwords and password vaults and how to store them securely. Specifically, I think a few weeks ago when we talked about Okta's breach and how they allowed a user to sync their personal Chrome password vault to their corporate computer, and then one of the shared passwords privileged accounts got saved to it, and it was really the personal account side that got compromised on their end, and then the attackers had access to this privileged account within the corporate environment. And of course, you should prevent personal accounts from getting synced. That is definitely something you should do. You can do that through group policy. You can do it through Intune. You can make a specific browser, the corporate browser, and I highly recommend using Edge. It's built in. It's based off of Chromium, and it has all the enterprise features that you need. But there is a password vault built into Edge. And while Adam and I are both fans of 1Password, I've used LastPass in my previous life. I've also used Bitwarden. All of those have enterprise grade subscriptions and packages, and they have features that will work for enterprises. Let's talk about the Edge password vault, because we haven't given this a lot of credit, and it is built in. It has something that you can use for your users, but I think, in my opinion, and we'll go through this, there are some pros and cons to using the Edge Password Vault. One of the pros, of course, is the ability to sync all of your passwords to your enterprise Entra ID. And so if you're using corporate passwords, it's easy. It's built in. Users are used to it. When they get the notification, would you like to save this password? They just hit yes, and then they just start saving passwords into that vault. And then it's signed in with a work profile. It's synced to your enterprise ID. When that ID gets turned off, they lose access to the vault, which will have a bunch of corporate passwords in it. It's also encrypted on the disk, which, again, there are some pros and cons to that, but I think the pros outweigh the cons in this case, because it's local to the device. The keys are actually stored locally within the operating system storage area. They never leave the device, and you can't just like siphon the keys off. It's designed specifically in a way that the only way you can actually get access to the vault is by logging into the operating system. You can't just have a device that is not logged in take the hard drive and siphon the keys off and get the passwords that way. You have to be logged in. That's when the key gets released. And of course, it's easy to manage, easy to deploy. Users are used to this. I think some of the cons, first off, when I think of separation of work and corporate, some of the environments like LastPass, which I've used in the past, and I don't know how 1Password and Bitwarden do something like this and some of the other password vaults, but I know 1Pass or 1LastPass, so I'll talk to it from that point. They were able to separate your corporate credentials from your personal one. They would give you a free license to the personal one, and then you can kind of merge them into essentially the same instance, but keep your personal and work credentials separate. That way, when you separate, you can take your personal vault with you and not have to worry about your corporate vault. Edge has that similar stance with different profiles. You could have a different profile, like your personal profile. But again, we kind of talked about how we want to keep that separate. And most users are not going to open up different profiles. They're just going to open up the one thing that they use all the time, which is probably the work profile. go to personal sites and start saving personal passwords into that as well, which they may lose access to when they leave. The other thing that is a con, I think, is because it's local and the user has to be logged in, if your user credentials get compromised and you get like a remote code execution or some sort of physical device compromised and they know your password, if they can log into your device, then they also have access. The attackers would have access to your credentials. There's also no MFA support or OTP tokens. Like with the other password vaults, you can use a shared password. Like say, for example, a social media site. You can save those credentials in there with an MFA token and then use that among a team. And so the account itself, the SaaS app, is protected with MFA, but the credential itself is shared in the vault. And you can't really do that with Edge because it doesn't store MFA tokens. And there's no really sharing of passwords. You know, I asked some of my coworkers in a thread that we have, and I also asked Copilot because I don't know of any way. And the only way to really like share a password is to copy it and send it through a secure channel like Signal or something like that, which is not what you want to do. So there's no way to actually have like a shared password where I'm sharing it back and forth like with the other vaults. And then finally, there's no way of an admin to manage that. So think of it from an IT administrative manner. If you had an admin be able to log into like a user's account or be able to reset their master password or something like that. There's no master password. It's just simply the user login. And so I think if like a user left and you needed their credentials or they had access to something and they never saved it anywhere else, now you have to like worry about, okay, do I wipe their device before or after? And should I log into their device and get the passwords from the stuff and then risk, you know, some privacy incident, all of that. And so I think there are some cons for sure. There's definitely some pros from the ease of deployment and the use, but some of the manageability, I just don't think that this is something that we want from an enterprise standpoint. What are your thoughts on that, Adam?
It's interesting because, you know, Microsoft does talk about in the documentation, hey, you know, why isn't there a master password to protect the data?
Yeah.
And basically the documentation says, and this is an interesting point to consider, that when you have the vault unlocked, then any other running process on the device has access to it at that point. Yep. It's in memory now.
Yeah.
Which is something I hadn't really thought of because you always feel like really safe and secure, like, oh, I've got my master password, you know, everything's safe and sound. And apparently Edge now does offer the ability to require authentication before the autofill capability will work. And so that's something you can turn on. It's not clear if you can do it from an enterprise manageability perspective, but I imagine you could.
I'm sure there's a policy that but you can force that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, here's the thing. Like a full-fledged password manager like a Bitwarden or a 1Password is, you know, probably the best solution. But it's one of those things like most orgs probably don't need everyone to have something like that. If you're really diligent about doing single sign-on,
Then your users
shouldn't have, you know, your rank and file users shouldn't have multiple passwords anyways, but your administrators, your IT folks probably do.
Yes.
And equipping them with the best tools to do their job is important. And I'm sure those, you know, Bitwarden is open source, but 1Password is a very commercial product. And I think it's reasonably priced, but still is going to have a fee associated with it, especially for enterprises. And you have to decide if that's worth paying. I think this is one of those things that it's better than not doing anything, for sure. I mean, it is built in. And I would imagine, too, a lot of, again, kind of rank and file folks, people have, especially through Apple, like Apple's pretty diligent about asking you in Safari on iOS and iPadOS devices, hey, do you want to save your password? Do you want to save your password? People are familiar, I think, innately with the concept that my browser can save and remember my passwords. And so if you're deploying Edge for Business and your users are signed in with their Entra ID and you configure appropriate controls around this, it's probably, again, better than nothing, especially if you don't plan to deploy a password manager to everyone. And it's probably something you can do without a lot of effort especially around user training or user acceptance. You don't have to go out to every individual user and teach them how to use this, because their Chrome browser on their Android, their Safari browser on their iOS device, in their personal lives, they're encountering this enough. You don't need to teach somebody how that works. It just does. It saves your password and then plugs it back in later. And there's value to that as well. And then I apologize for being so ignorant about this, but I know on, speaking of mobile platforms, Authenticator app has started to offer the ability to you do password vaulting as well, essentially. And my understanding was that's that same sync engine that you would get in Edge. So if you're signed in with a Microsoft account for consumer use, or your Entra ID account for work or school, you'll see that synchronization happen. So if you save something in Edge on your Windows PC, then you could actually also autofill that on your iPhone if you're running Authenticator and you have it set as your autofill agent of choice. So I think that's a thing. Maybe that's only on the consumer side and it hasn't come to the Entra ID side, but I know it's definitely at least there on the MSA part of it for sure, and probably is for Entra ID as well. So this actually sync extends even beyond just the Edge browser on desktop, but to all, to the mobile platforms as well.
Yeah, I think you had two good points there. One, that it is available on multi-platforms, and in the documentation, it does tell you where the encryption key is protected within each operating system. So for example, for Windows, the storage area is DPAPI. On iOS, the storage area is iOS keychain. So it uses the keychain on the back end to store the encryption key for this. Mm-hmm. The other thing, really good point, is that there are use cases for this for the rank and file. And that's how we did it at my previous company, was LastPass was used, but it wasn't used for everybody. Not everybody got a license for it. It was an enterprise IT password vault that we used for our IT folks, because we have more use of using passwords that have different things, like for different servers, different processes, whatever, your firewalls. And the rank and file didn't need that. It was something that we did offer as a benefit if people wanted it, but we didn't go out and say, oh, this is what we use. And so, yeah, absolutely. The rank and file, this is something that they can use. And if they're not accessing different systems, then it's a perfectly cost-effective method of using, you know, secure passwords.
But I think you made several good points about the cons of it, in terms of it's with any of these, they're not as fleshed out as a software package that's designed to do this one thing. So in terms of support of like passkey synchronization or one-time passcodes, or you talked about just the ability to share, like, hey, I need to share this password with Jane in accounting. How do I do that? There's no clean way to do that either. So it's very rudimentary is the wrong word, but it solves, you know, like that 80-20 rule. This solves 80% of the use cases here. And that's a good swath of it, and certainly can help reduce some risk and bring some benefit to your users. And as we say on this show many times, if you are going to take something away, you should deliver an enterprise equivalent. And we have said in no uncertain terms, you should not allow people to sign in to browsers with consumer identities and then synchronize passwords. So you shouldn't allow people to sign into a Chrome browser with their Google account and then turn on password sync. You shouldn't do that. So at a bare minimum, you need to deliver the equivalent. And you can do that with this. You can sign in with your Entra ID worker school account, and you can synchronize passwords. So as we encourage IT admins to do, to avoid shadow IT, always deliver something equivalent if you're going to take something away, as much as possible, whenever possible. And this is a way to do that.
And then our other listener brought up another point on something that we haven't really highlighted, which is enterprise applications with a shared password. And this is a way that you can configure an enterprise application essentially using the SSO method, with Microsoft being a broker and even having a password configured for an enterprise application, and then assigning that application to a user or a group, and that application would show up on the back end through the My Apps portal. just as you would with any other SSO application if you were to federate it with Entra ID and then assign that app. So this is configuring an enterprise app on the back end with a password instead of federating it with Entra. And the beauty of that is the password is completely non-visible to the user who is accessing the application. It looks just like any other app that you would SSO to. They access it the same way. And you also have the ability to scope conditional access to the My Apps portal, right? Because it's part of the Entra ID enterprise application. So you have the ability to scope conditional access, MFA, all of that other stuff, even if the app itself doesn't have MFA. So there are a little bit of ways to make it more secure. It does require an extension on the browser for it to work, and it only works with web apps. So that's one use case, right? So that's specifically just for web apps. But there are some use cases for this, and I think definitely is something to highlight. We'll have some documentation in the show notes if this is of interest, but it's a way to essentially have an app with a shared password. Again, there's no way to copy that password as the user and like share it or scope an MFA token that you would. So like, for example, for me, the social media is one of the biggest quandaries in this case, because if you want to natively log into the social media application like Twitter or something like that, you can't have it SSO. You have to copy the password and the MFA token into the app locally in order to log into the app locally. There are ways that are better if you're using some sort of, you know, like Sprout or some other enterprise level social media management, where then you can federate that app with Entra and have all of your social media sites. That's the better way to do it. And that's obviously cost money, but this solution won't work for that, because again, it's just a web app and it has to be configured on the back end. So
yeah, it's just a great single sign-on like option for any app that doesn't support SAML essentially, or modern federated authentication methods. So social media is the right example. And Andy, you're right. You should use a social media kind of enterprise broker type application the majority of the time. However, there are still going to be times when someone needs to sign into the actual Twitter account for the company. And this is a really clean way to do that, where again, nobody even has the ability to copy that password, take it, give it to someone else, use it in other contexts, whatever. And you can still build all the conditional access policy around it. So if you have the three leaders of your social media team all need access to your actual Twitter account on twitter.com, you can put this as an enterprise application in Entra ID. You can grant them access to it. You can say the type is shared password. Now, the one thing they do have to do is install a browser extension, and it works with all the major browsers. It's not specific to Edge. In fact, this even predates the existence of the Chromium-based Edge browser. This goes all the way back to the previous Edge browser, Project Spartan. And once you've set that up, again, the user just goes through a normal sign-in. It looks like everything else in their My Apps portal for Entra ID. And then the extension will autofill that password and away they go. And if you need to revoke that access, obviously delete their Entra ID account, remove their access to that specific app, whatever. But a great way to allow a group of folks within your company that need to access a thing that doesn't support SAML or any sort of federated auth in a really secure, clean way. And so appreciate our listener calling this out. It's something I'm familiar with going back to my days as a identity technical specialist. It's cool and it's been around forever and it works really well. Andy mentioned kind of the limitations of it, but I think there's a ton of use cases for it. Anything that's a web app that requires username and password, this is a great option. And it's been built into when it was called Azure Active Directory back in like 2018 timeframe or 2017. It's been around forever and it's good.
If you were doing it that way, Adam, the native app, right, on the Twitter side, the native account can't have MFA on it, correct?
Yeah, pretty much, unless you had another way to solve for it, because this does only do the password.
Correct.
So, I mean, there is that. In a lot of cases, when you have people sharing, there isn't really a great way to do MFA. Short of, again, like give them all a one password account and share it that way. But then they do have access to that that password and can paste it and send it out. And you could say, well, they don't have the one-time password code. But if you actually know how 1Password works, it's possible to edit it and pull out the shared secret that generates the OTP and actually take that with you too and plug it into Google Authenticator or whatever. If you're a determined enough inside a risk kind of person, there's a way to make that all portable and take it with you with a different password vault versus this. Again, as the end user, you don't have access to the password at all. It just auto-populates and there's no way to kind of grab it back out.
Yeah. And you can mitigate that risk by just having a really long, very long password.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. So moving on, a couple of Twitter threads that piqued my interest. We won't have to spend a ton of time on this, but one of them was at the Tom Zone, and he is a senior IT cybersecurity reporter at IT Brew. He used to be at Gizmodo, and he wrote in his tweet, it's been long enough for me to admit publicly that when I left Gizmodo in 2022, I changed my Slack username to Slackbot, and Gizmodo Media failed to detect or delete it for months. And he has some screenshots of him interacting with the employees as Slackbot, and it's pretty funny. But while it is funny, it can be a huge risk if he was a malicious user, a malicious insider, or someone who wanted to do harm. And so this is just, you know, not that long ago in 2022, major media company didn't have, obviously, single sign-on to their major communications application, because had his account been disabled from an identity standpoint and it was federated, then obviously he should have lost access to the Slack platform. But in this case, he did not. So, you know, basics, right? We've talked about single sign-on and federating your SaaS apps. And if you don't know what that means, certainly reach out to us and we can, you know, help you out. But this is something all enterprises need to do. You need to have an identity provider. Entra can do single sign-on and federate your SaaS apps at the free level, at the pre, you know, just without having to pay for it. That's a feature that comes with it if you didn't know. And you should do that. And if you want to pay for something else, Okta or Ping or whatever, great, go and do that and start federating all of your apps. That way, when you turn off your ID, it turns off access to all of your enterprise applications.
You should definitely go to the show notes and see some of the posts. This person was not trying very hard to conceal their identity, at least not in these screenshots. It's pretty humorous for sure. But yes, obviously a serious security defect. And I know a lot of organizations, especially smaller ones, and some of these blogs, they really don't have that many employees. And poor Gizmodo has been handed around from different publishing entity one after another for years now. So I'm sure their whatever technical setup they have is a mess. But it's a good point, Andy, that even if you don't want to pay money, you can go stand up an Entra ID directory for free. You can bring in your domain for free, and you can do single sign-on to applications for free. All of that's free. Microsoft won't charge you a dime for any of that. And so even if you're not a big shop, you don't have a lot of budget for a full-fledged identity solution, you can at least stand up a single sign-on provider with Entra ID and start federating your apps that way. And it doesn't have to become like a big IT thing. Like, you don't have a big IT shop. It's one of the most basic like security hygiene things you can do. I know we're all sick of hearing it at this point, and I know I've been saying variations of this for 7 years now, but identity is the control plane. And if you can get in through identity or maintain access through identity, you still have a heck of a lot of access. And on the corollary, if you're able to shut down identity, you shut down a lot of access control problems right there, a lot of security challenges right there. So get your identity straight, and good call out there.
And then the final thread that I wanted to talk about, it struck me and I was like, yeah, this is definitely something that any IT security folks should read. This is from at Tech Spence, and his tweet just said, the number one thing IT admins should stop doing right now. And it's basically just spur conversation. And his initial one was logging into non-DCs with their domain admin accounts. And then he asked, what's your number one stop doing this right now thing? And it's a whole list of things, from making sure that you're patching your border devices, your WAN and LAN border, to using LAPS, like stop using a static local admin account, shared password, start using LAPS. But I wanted to just highlight the logging into non-DCs with their domain admin accounts, because this is something we haven't talked about in a long, long time. Episode 9, where we had our first guest, I believe, Morgan, who came on and talked about AD security, Active Directory security. So go back and listen to that, because a lot of it is still fairly relevant. But one of the things that we talked about was separation of your key roles. And in this case, domain admins should only be logging into domain controllers. And if you are an IT admin and you have domain admin, you know that by default, domain admin group is added by policy to every single device that is joined to the domain, every single workstation, every single server. And so to really, it's a huge change, but you really want to remove that group from all of your servers and from all of your workstations, and just have the domain admin credentials log into the domain the domain controller. You should only need to log into that when you're making changes to GPO and other things that domain admins do. Otherwise, have a server admin and then add a group to all the servers, because most server admins never really have a need to log into user workstations, right? So that should be reserved for your help desk. And so you have another group that is local admin or something like that to your user workstations. And you have server admins to have local admin to servers. And so you start separating out these admins where, if one admin credential gets compromised, they don't have access to every single device. They would have to pivot and escalate and laterally move, and it'd be more work. Not to say that it's impossible, but every hurdle puts a little bit more time, gives your defense team some more time to detect the attack, so on and so forth. So that was something that I was working on at a previous org when I was there. It is definitely a monumental change, but you can take it in chunks. And so, look at having a server admin for your servers, a workstation admin for just your workstations, domain admin is just your DCs. And then if people need local admin, you can scope a local admin just for that device. And that, we don't want to get into taking away local admin rights, but that's something that you should probably do. It's also a big change, but ultimately exceptions happen and you need to provide someone with local admin and whatnot. And there's other options out there now as well, but just separating out the different roles and the different credentials. And yes, it becomes a lot, which is why, we started the show with password vaults and IT and whatnot. So something to think about. A lot of good stuff in this thread. I'll put it in the show notes. Definitely worth reading. Because, if you keep going down, there's so many, admins should PIM, PAW, and PAM. Stop giving out Intune admin to folks that can make do with Intune RBAC roles. Stop using global admin to look into the tenants. Admins should remember that with great power comes great responsibility. So on and so forth. So there's a lot of really good advice here. Each one is something that I would recommend you look at your environment and decide, can I implement this? Is this a risk I need to reduce? So on and so forth.
One here that's very on topic is IT admin should stop reusing passwords across multiple accounts or systems. Use a password manager and generate some passwords for those. That'd be awesome. There's a Instagram account that I like to follow called Chef Reactions. And the gentleman who runs it is obviously some sort of professional chef. And he does that kind of duet thing you saw get popular on TikTok where he reacts to another video. And it's a good reminder that not all advice on the internet is created equal, just like not all recipes or cooking demonstrations or tutorials are created equal, because people make a lot of gross, nasty stuff, and he calls them out on it and talks about how disgusting stuff looks. Or conversely, he also does duet some really great videos where people make amazing looking food and compliments and talks through their technique and what they're doing. All that's to say, most of this thread looks really good. It's well-meaning advice. I see a thing or two in here that maybe I don't know better on maybe why that's a good idea, but it at least gives me pause, because some advice has evolved over time. And so I saw someone come in here with a very official looking username, even Active Directory Pro. And one of the things they say is stop setting your user accounts to password never expires. Maybe there's a reason to not check that particular box and maybe still set an expiration that's 999 days or something. I don't know if there's a meaningful difference, because I am actually not an Active Directory guru. However, and this is a whole other topic, but you know, there's a lot of guidance nowadays and a lot of folks following this guidance that passwords should indeed not expire unless you suspect them to be compromised. And so maybe it's well-meaning advice, or maybe there's some thing to know about Active Directory that if you check that box, things get weird. I don't know. But people will just say, you know, matter-of-factly, well, you still need to be expiring your passwords. And honestly, no, you don't. Not unless you suspect them to be expired. So again, take any thread like this with some advice. Some of it's really good. Some of it take with a grain of salt as well on your way. So this was fun to read through for sure. And it was a reminder of what Twitter can be when it's still good, of a place to kind of share different ideas and throw ideas together and have the community come together and spitball things. This was fun.
I knew you were going to say something about the password one when I scrolled over it. And interesting enough, I don't know how exactly our architecture works at Microsoft, but I do know that we still have Active Directory. I do know that my user has an Active Directory object that is synced to Entra ID. And I know that we don't have an expiration date on our passwords. So my assumption is that my Active Directory object actually has the password never expires box checked.
Yeah.
That's my assumption. See, I don't know for sure.
And it's maybe one of those things like in Outlook, it's possible to create a recurring event that never ends, you know, kind of like the song from Lamb Chop, but it's not always a good idea to do that. Like, even if you set the last day of the recurring meeting to be 3 years in the future, that's fine. Setting it to be indefinite can sometimes make things weird. I think it's gotten better with modern Outlook, but older clients used to choke on that occasionally, especially the more you'd modify and change the series and move it over here and move it over there, it would break and then you'd have to just cancel it and start over. And so I used to guide people, and again, this was 10 years ago. Even if you plan to use it for a long time, still set an expiration date. I don't care if it's 10 years in the future, 10 years is still better than infinity. So I didn't know if it was maybe something like that, where you're still better setting an expiration and just making it like a bajillion days long or some, you know, crazy number. And if you check the box, things get weird. I don't know. But yeah, it definitely caught my eye. I mean, it's still, you know, every time you hear a security event and they get on the news and the newscaster says, and they remind everyone that it's important to change your passwords every 90 days. And, you know, you hear a bunch of advice that's not actually accurate anymore. So I didn't know if it was one of those or what.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that's our show for this week. It was a great conversation. Mm-hmm. Thanks for watching and listening as always. Our contact information is in the show notes. If you have questions, topics you want us to talk about, or just general feedback, please let us know. Thanks. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the Blue Security Podcast. Please check out the show notes, catch up on episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Find Andy on Twitter at AJawZero and Adam at AJBrewer. See you at our next episode.